Our next reader is Jane Affleck, and she is jumping for joy at the prospect of spending the entire humid, smoggy, sweat-drenched summer writing her thesis, which I'm looking forward to reading in her sauna of an apartment near the DeCary Expressway. In her free moments, she will lob rotten fruit at SUVs in nearby Westmount to vent her frustrations at global warming. Please welcome Jane.
How hostile that makes me sound. I'm really not that hostile. I also didn't think I was reading now, but anyway. Now that Sonia's gone, you're taking over her junior, Matthew tells me as I walk into the teacher's room early one Saturday. Starting this afternoon, he hands me the file. His name is Shota. The tiny mugshot in the file shows a somber round face with big eyes. He doesn't look typically Japanese, in spite of straight black hair and the ubiquitous schoolboy cut. He's 7 years old, likes animals, kendo, and soccer. Can say and write the alphabet, but sometimes forgets the letter Y, and according to Sonia's notes, doesn't like to say W. Sometimes seems not to be paying attention. 4 hours later, those big eyes are across the table in one of the empty adult classrooms. Rewarding him for getting through the lesson with a 5-minute one-on-one with the soccer ball is out of the question in this confining space. I will have to think of something else. Hello, Shota, I say. He says nothing, just watches as I arrange my books and flashcards on the table. Blinking is his only movement, the fanning of long, dark lashes. I look up and smile. He is startled, opens his eyes wider. They are the color of chestnuts dipped in buckwheat honey. I find myself unable to say anything for a moment. We stare, mutually infatuated with each other's eyes, or so I suppose that he's not seen green eyes before. Sonia's were gray. He says nothing of his own accord during the entire lesson, but he does repeat words when I indicate he is to do so. His voice is hoarse, whispery. I wonder if maybe he's sick, has a sore throat. I read him a short story, and he silently and correctly completes a matching exercise in his workbook. He continues to stare at me, looking away only when necessary, to write at a point. We play memory with animal flashcards, but I don't make him say the names when he gets a match. I don't want him to strain his voice in case he is sick. The bell rings. He stares at me as he closes his books and puts them in his duffel bag, stares as he slips off his chair and pushes it in, still stares as he backs to the door and opens it. Bye, Shota, I say. He stares until the wall blocks his view. Every Saturday, Shota continues to stare at me, continues to show his comprehension but remains reticent, speaking only when requested to in a voice that retains its hoarse, whispery quality. He seems neither bothered nor pleased by the lessons, though when the kids' room is free, and towards the end I say, soccer time, he sprints for the cupboard to get the ball. His face relaxes, his eyes lose the intensity they have during the lessons. He knows that for the next 5 minutes, his energy need not be forced towards comprehension. 1 week, Shota does not respond to my questions even by pointing. I wonder if he's thinking that this is a beautiful Saturday in late spring, and he could be outside playing soccer with his friends instead of stuck inside a windowless room with his dull English teacher. I get out some paper and find a set of markers that hasn't yet been wrecked by the kinder classes. Okay, Shota, let's draw. What do you want to do today? I can't use the conditional because he hasn't learned it yet. I choose a marker. I want to go to the beach. I draw myself lying by the sea. I want to sleep in the sun and then go swimming. What do you want to do? I nudge the markers towards him. He takes the brown one and draws a goat. A skinny goat, horns curving out of bowed head, small upturned line for mouth. The goat is dancing, or else is ready to charge. Shota looks up at me, grins. He's missing one of his front teeth. I smile, wondering when he lost the tooth, not yet sure he fully understands what I've asked. Me, he says, and I laugh. He grins and writes the word under the goat, changes markers, draws a girl kneeling beside the goat. Around her legs, traces a red square. I wonder if it's his sister. He pauses. Sensei, which means teacher, he says, still grinning. You, and writes you under the girl. I can't stop laughing. He colors little red squares inside the larger one. It resembles the picnic blanket in the text from last week's lesson. He draws a yellow sun, strands of green grass, little black legs, lines with legs, sorry. Ari, he says, and looks up. Ants, I say, and write the word on the whiteboard. He copies it, tongue pushing through the gap in his teeth. He finishes, gets up, and skips around the kinder table, headbutting the air every couple of steps. I tape the picture to the wall amidst the other kids' drawings, still grinning at the goat on the page and the little goat prancing behind me. I'm amused, bemused, that a 7-year-old boy would represent himself as a goat and want to spend the day on a picnic with his English teacher. He can't possibly have the same reference points. He can't be thinking about Pan. Anyway, he's too young. Anyway, he's too young to even think of going on a Saturday afternoon bacchanal. It's just extraordinarily funny. Shota, the honey-eyed goat. Shota's lessons end a month later. The school staff doesn't tell me his last lesson is approaching, and so I don't know until the following week when his name doesn't appear on the schedule. I think they do it on purpose, not tell, in case excessive attachments have formed. No embarrassing moments as teachers bid farewell to students they will probably never see again. At the end of my shift that Saturday, I go to the kids' room and extract Shota's drawing from the web of scotch tape on the wall. There's a smudge in one corner of the page from a high-flying soccer ball. Mm-hmm. I fold it and put it in my pocket.
Thank you, Jane.